of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Welcome to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from Southern California, and I am so excited that you could tune into the show tonight. You know, beyond any reasonable doubt, new evidence proves that we have the power to reverse disease, redefine aging, and even alter reality itself. To do so, however, we must be willing to cross the traditional boundaries that have separated science and spirituality and us from our world. Tonight, Greg Braden is going to talk to us about what all this has to do with our beliefs, and it is going to open our eyes. It's really, really fascinating. You're going to love it. So stay tuned. I also want to let my listeners know that on April 20th, again at 11 a.m. California time, we are having our Financial Prosperity Collective Consciousness Meditation. You know, the last one we did, we had tremendous results. I got emails from people who got their dream jobs, got raises. Many received surprise checks in the mail. Really outstanding. I personally experienced a sharp rise of clients, so that was quite wonderful. If you want to participate, you must go to my website, lawofattractiontools.com, to sign up under the Collective Consciousness Meditation Schedule. Again, that's April 20th, and you're going to get some really, really great results with this. And guess what? This Wednesday, Robert Swartz, author of Courageous Souls, will be joining us for a very special broadcast with some very interesting information that just might change your life. Rob will be talking about why traumatic events happen to us. So tune in at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time or 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. It's really going to be a great show, so tune in for it. And then next Sunday after that, we are having the very charming Lee Harris from London, who will be channeling some incredible information from Zephariah. I just love it. I just love it. I just love these guests. And if you remember our wonderful show from last week with G.W. Harden, you'll remember about the Gathering of One event during the week of June 21st. Well, I've had a lot of response about it, and G.W. wanted me to tell the listeners that if you want to set up sacred geometry sites on June 21st to participate, because you can't get to Montana, then contact him, send him an email, and he'll put your location on his webpage with your contact information, and that will allow other people who cannot attend in Montana to at least participate in a group in your area. I know Geneva, Switzerland, and Ontario, Canada have already set up groups. Remember, you only need as few as 8 people, and you can encompass, you know, a few hundred. So if you are interested, all you have to do is contact G.W. Harden at thegatheringofone.com, and he'll get you going on that. Now, on with the show. New York Times bestselling author Greg Braden is internationally renowned as a pioneer in bridging science and spirituality. Following a successful career, senior computer systems designer for Martin Marietta Defense Systems, during the last years of the Cold War. In 1991, he became the first technical operations manager for Cisco Systems, where he led the development of the global support team, assuring the reliability of today's internet. Thank you, Greg. For more than 20 years, Greg has searched high mountain villages, remote monasteries, and forgotten texts to uncover their timeless secrets. Today, his work has led to such paradigm-shattering books as The Isaiah Effect, The God Code, The Divine Matrix, Bridging Time, Space, Miracles, and Beliefs, and his just-released book, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief. Welcome, Greg, to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. So glad you could be with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to hear your voice. I'm absolutely thrilled to be on the program today, and we're having a great day with our book launch that started early this morning.
Oh, really? Oh!
Today is the official day, and it's doing very well in all the charts, and it's just a really very, very exciting day.
You know what? I knew when I read it. And I've been doing a lot of research on it, too. I'm going, wow, you got another bestseller here, that's for sure.
What really is exciting for me is the last book, The Divine Matrix, was voted, nominated as a finalist for the Best New Science and Cosmology Book for 2007, as well as doing well in the charts. And the reason that I'm sharing that is it tells me that we're finding a language that bridges some of the best science of our time that's obscurely hidden in these technical journals with the language of the right brain and the heart in a meaningful way that we can all apply in our lives. And, of course, that's the great challenge of any author is to, it's not enough to have information, but to find a way to share that information in a way that means something in people's lives.
Absolutely.
So I'm very gratified, tremendously thrilled, and I'm still learning, and it tells me that we're finding that language that I think is meaningful and being received by a lot of people.
Well, on top of it all, I think what you are doing is really awakening the masses, and I'm extremely grateful for every word you write because we need it right now so desperately. So you are touching many lives with your books, and I truly, truly appreciate that.
Well, it's good to hear today. I appreciate the kind words. And, you know, I think it's no accident that so many books in this genre, I'm in very good company with brilliant authors and scientists and engineers and researchers that are all in their own way. You know, we're working together for a better world. But the experts are telling us, Julie, that we are, in fact, living a very unique time in recorded human history in the last 5,125 years. Of recorded human history, and that we are faced with the greatest number of different challenges ever faced by a single generation, and that each of those challenges in and of themselves could potentially bring an end to everything that we cherish as a civilization and as a species. Each of those challenges could, and the fact that all of them are happening right now at the same time tells us that that we've got to look at ourselves and our world differently, and with that difference, apply our new understandings to solve many of the problems that we have today. Everything from the way we solve problems through war between nations to dwindling resources and new diseases and failing economies. As different as those all sound from one another, they're all linked through a field of energy that connects everything. And what we now know is that we all have a vote in that field. We all speak directly to that field through the language of feeling and belief, if we understand how the language works.
I noticed there's something really unique. It seems like the people in the other cultures are understanding the science behind the collective consciousness more than we here in Western culture.
Well, it's, you know, there's an interesting phenomenon. What I know is that when we leave the borders of this beautiful country, and I'm going to be really clear, I love this country. It's the best in the world. We've got some problems, sure, and even with our problems, I think we have the potential to find solutions and lead in a new way of living in this world. That potential exists. And having said that, I'll say that when we leave the borders of America, the audiences increase exponentially throughout the world. We had 9,000 people at a seminar in an athletic stadium in Mexico, and thousands of people in the European audiences. I'll be in Japan at the end of the month on a tour there, and this is the kind of information they love.
Uh-huh.
Accessible science, not not the real lofty stuff that doesn't make any sense, but the science that tells them that we we're part of our world and that we can make a difference in the world. So I think a lot of the world is open to receiving. And American audiences, I think they've been so inundated with so much and so many different kinds of information that in some respects they feel overwhelmed.
Oh,
by,
maybe that's it, yeah.
Yeah, by, and because there's so much really good information here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every week, I mean, you go to a major city and see amazing people, you know, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer. You know, people like that that are colleagues of mine. I'm just so honored to be in such good company. But they're, you know, they've been sharing this message for 25 years. Those are pioneers in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So so there is, I think, an openness that we find beyond our borders. While here in America, I think people are open, but they're cautiously open and maybe a little more, just, I think, overwhelmed with all the things that have happened since 9/11, all the change in our country and in our lives.
But I think with the message that you have, that we are all connected, I think that now is the time that we can each, and I'm talking about us in the U.S., that we can each sort of take our power back and not place so much power on our leaders, but realize that we have the power to create peace and prosperity and everything.
Well, I think, yes, I agree. And I think what we're beginning to understand is there is no them and us. The,
true.
the book, a year ago, we had released a book that was entitled The Divine Matrix, Bridging Time, Space, Miracles, and Belief.
Right.
And the focus of that book was the to really illuminate the fact, and it is now a fact. It's no longer a theory. It's no longer a metaphor. But it is a scientific fact that there is a field of energy that underlies everything that we know and experience in our world. Everything in this field of energy is connected. And one of the powerful elements of that understanding is that we are all born with a language that speaks to this field. So The Divine Matrix was the book that talked about the field, and this new book, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief, talks and explores and gives us a way to apply the language of human emotion, feeling, and belief in ways that we often discount here in the West.
Mm.
And this is what is so very different. I've spent, you know, I was trained as a scientist, as an engineer. I worked in the defense industry up until the end of the Cold War by day and by night and on the weekends and on my vacation time. I was exploring some of the most ancient and remote and pristine places remaining on the earth today that have preserved a very different way of looking at our world.
Yeah,
and
you know,
that
was one of the major questions I wanted to ask you, because you were in the scientific world.
Mm-hmm.
You had such a dramatic shift into writing about the spiritual aspect.
Not really. You know, I think it seems dramatic to people on the outside, but for me and for many scientists, I know that it's more of a progression and a logical next step rather than a dramatic change. And the reason for that is because the deeper that scientists explore our physical world, time, the universe, the atom, however it happens, the nature, biology, the deeper we explore these things, the more it becomes apparent that there is something else that is there. There is a guiding principle, whatever we choose to call that, whether it's a mathematic formula or whether it's what we call a God, there is this guiding principle that's there. And for me, it made tremendous sense. I never made a distinction between science and spirituality when I was a child. And I thought that everybody else thought the way that I did. I believed that everyone else, you know, it was something we talked about every day at the office, but I thought it was one of those unspoken beliefs. And what I found was nothing could be further from the truth. When I got into the corporations, what I found was that there was a sense that we had to choose between science or spirituality, and that the two were incompatible, mutually exclusive, that they couldn't work together. And what I always believed and what I still have found to be true is that when we study science, what we are studying is the mechanism, the things that make our world as it is. And when we understand that mechanism, ultimately we're understanding a higher power or a higher presence in the way it makes itself known in our world. So for me, it was a logical progression. And I know for many people, they say, well, how did you make the quantum leap?
Yeah.
You know, from science and corporations into what you're doing right now.
But thank God you did.
Well, yeah, I was an engineer at the time, engineering software, and now I think I'm still kind of engineering. We're just working with consciousness instead of software, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of look at it the same way. Instead of a corporate project that is overdue and behind schedule and over budget, we're looking at consciousness going through the greatest shift in recorded human history, and us trying to solve the problems kind of at the last minute that our very survival now depends upon. So it's kind of like a big project.
Yeah,
we're all project managers.
Well, let's jump into your fantastic new book, Spontaneous
right.
Healing of Belief. Now, why has it taken us so long, or how it's taken science so long to understand the modern understandings of the universe?
Well, it's a good question. What's very interesting when you really begin to explore science itself, science is a language that explains our universe and helps us understand our relationship to the world around us, and it's one of many languages. Science is relatively recent. It's only been around, scientific method has been around for about 300 years. In the text, we say that science began when Isaac Newton formalized the laws of gravity. That was the beginning of science. So for 300 years, we've had a way of looking at the world and the universe and our relationship and our role in that world and in that universe. And as good as it served us, and a lot of good things have come from science, but what we now know is that there are two assumptions that are absolutely false that are preventing us from going further in terms of our understandings. The unified field theory of the universe, for example, why it stalled out for 30 years, why we can't unify quantum physics with classical physics, why some of the new theories seem to be stuck in one place and can't go any further. All of this is based on two false assumptions in science. And if our listeners have children in school today, their textbooks still hold these false assumptions to be true, as mine did when I was in school. And the first one we've already talked about, the false assumption is that much of the universe contains empty space. Our textbooks tell us that about 96% of the universe is empty, only about 4% contains anything. And of course, now we know that is absolutely false. There are very rare forms of energy and matter, dark energy, dark matter, that make up about 90, the other 96% of the universe. We may not understand it well, but there's definitely something there. It's not empty. So the universe is not empty. It's full of an essence that we're only beginning to understand, number one. And then number two, the second false assumption is that our inner experiences of thought, feeling, emotion, and belief have no effect upon our outer world. And we know that is absolutely false, that human emotion, human feeling, and belief that are heart-based, heart-centered experiences, and we can talk about why that's important in a minute, those heart-centered experiences have a direct effect on the energy that makes that 96% of the universe. So there is a growing body of evidence suggesting now that we have much more influence over the world around us than we've ever believed. And this is the essence of many of the ancient traditions. They've always told us this. Science is only now catching up, just now arriving at the place where those traditions began. So we know there's a field of energy out there. It connects everything, and we have direct access to that field. We communicate with that field if we know the language that the field recognizes, and that's what this book is all about.
Wow. And I noticed that you mentioned the code. Is this the code that you're talking about in the book?
Well, again, a growing number of scientists, mainstream peer-reviewed published journals and scientific texts are now suggesting that this universe and our world and our bodies work like a big computer. And rather than everything working like a computer based in electronics, our computer is based in the energy of consciousness itself. And just as every computer has programs that get things done, our consciousness computer has a program that we call belief that gets things done, and that belief is the code that the field recognizes. So I was honoring the lingo of the scientists themselves. They were using the computer ease that we're all familiar with, and I was honoring that to make that point, that belief is a code. It's a language, and we can upgrade that code just the way we can upgrade the software on our computer if we choose. And this is what we find, Julie, in those most ancient texts and in the monasteries of Tibet and Egypt and Bolivia and Peru and the native traditions in the Andes Mountains and right in our own backyard here. I live in northern New Mexico. They left us the instructions that describe precisely how we speak this language and how we use this language to influence our physical reality. And I'm going to use that word very consciously. It's not about controlling our world or manipulating or imposing our will. It's about participating and influencing our bodies and our physical reality in ways that mirror our beliefs and our heart's desire.
Wow.
So
that
we're covering a lot of ground in just a short period of time, but now we can tie into all this throughout the rest of the program.
Yeah, and there's something that you just said that I think all of my listeners throughout the world have got to hear. You state in your book that we mirror our beliefs, not our thoughts, which goes deeper than the other spiritual teachings out there in the world today. I think this is a huge distinction. Can you elaborate on this?
Well, sure. We all have ways that we think we are in the world, or that we would like to believe that we are, or the ways that we want other people to see us. On the other hand, our truest beliefs don't lie. And those are the beliefs, sometimes they're subconscious beliefs, that we hold in our hearts. The world around us doesn't lie, and it will tell us what those true beliefs are. So when we look at the quality of our health, the health in our bodies, when we look at the quality of our intimate relationships, the quality of our careers and how satisfied we are with our careers, the abundance, both the spiritual as well as material abundance in our lives, when we look at all these things, these are all powerful gauges. They're not right, wrong, good, or bad. They are simply indicators, if we have the wisdom to recognize what they're saying to us, telling us what we truly believe and what we truly hold as true, rather than what our ego wants to think that we believe or what we'd like to believe. And it's sometimes tough looking at those mirrors. We talk about them in the book and how to use them, how to recognize them. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes what the mirror is showing us is very different than what we would like to believe is happening in our lives. And that's where the workshop begins.
yeah.
Mine as well. I mean, everyone, we all go through this together. So it's and no one has all the answers, and we're all still learning. But if we recognize that our physical reality is a direct reflection of what we have claimed as individuals and collectively, what we've claimed collectively as a culture and as a civilization. If we recognize that and there's something out there we don't like, then we also know precisely how to go about making that change. But first, we've got to embrace the reality of living in this world that's reflected. And that, for some people, is a very different way of thinking about things.
Yeah, definitely. And so it's just not our thoughts that pop into our head. It's the actual beliefs that really tell
precisely
us everything.
precisely what we know is, and contrary to what I was taught and what many people have been taught, is that our thoughts are important, and they actually hold very little power unto themselves until they are fueled with the emotion of our love for what we're thinking, or sometimes subconsciously our fear for what we're thinking. It's that fuel that brings that thought to life. So a thought is something that happens in our brain. That's where the thought is created. Our love or fear for that thought comes from the lower energy centers in our bodies, our procreative centers. And when those two come together, they mesh, they merge in our heart, in the physical center of our heart. And the reason this is important is because in just the last few years, what has been revealed about the human heart is that it is the most powerful generator of electrical fields and magnetic fields in the human body, much more powerful than the brain. The brain does create electric fields, the brain does create magnetic fields, but the heart's electrical fields are about 100 times stronger than the brain's, and the heart's magnetic fields are about 5,000 times stronger than the brain. So this is important because we live in a world of electrical and magnetic information, electrical and magnetic fields. Rocks, trees, plants, our goldfish, our hamsters, our bodies, all of those things ultimately are electrical and magnetic patterns of energy. And if we want to change those, then we've got to create another electrical and magnetic field to override or to overlay what has already been created. And our hearts do precisely that. And this is the reason why a feeling and an emotion and a belief have so much more power than the thought, because they are stronger electrically and they're stronger magnetically. So it makes tremendous sense to feel the feeling of what we'd like to experience rather than thinking the thought of what we'd like to experience. So the key to everything we're saying, and this is what's taught in the monasteries and in the ancient traditions, is to feel the feeling in our heart as if our desire has already come to pass, to feel from the outcome as if it's already happened. So to feel as if the healing has already occurred in our bodies or in the bodies of our loved ones, and to give thanks of gratitude and appreciation. That's the key, the thanks of gratitude and appreciation for the healing that has already happened, or the peace between nations that's already happened, or the abundance in our checkbook that's already happened, or the perfect relationship that's already happened. Knowing that when we do that, what we're really doing, feeling a belief is the human language, but what we're really doing is creating patterns of electrical and magnetic fields in our heart that allow those very experiences to manifest in our lives. And we're conditioned to do just the opposite. We're conditioned to have the feelings of lack when we don't have the relationship. We're sad by the feeling of what we don't have. Or when we look at the checkbook at the end of the month and wonder where the rent is going to come from. We're conditioned to focus on what we don't have. And now we know that when we do that, we actually perpetuate the very condition that we'd like to change. If you know the mechanism, it makes tremendous sense.
Wow.
Fields in our heart are setting up the patterns in life for the things that we'd like to experience. And it makes tremendous sense then to feel as if those things are already there, so that the patterns can exist to bring them to us, rather than feeling the lack and the disappointment.
Wow.
But this goes to the very heart of what our culture has conditioned us to do, and that is to feel like helpless victims.
Yeah.
In terms of our health, in terms of what happens in the world, whether we're talking about the economy or we're talking about war. And the truth is, we're only helpless victims as long as we believe that we are. And when we accept our role as part of, rather than separate from, all that we see, all of that changes. And I think that's what this generation is all about. We're all faced with such great problems and challenges today, and we cannot possibly expect one person or one committee or one government to solve them. We've got to do this together, And now we're learning that we all have the power to do precisely that. So other than that, not much happening, Julie.
Wow. That is so profound. Oh, my God. That is exactly. Oh, it makes so much sense. Do we have direct evidence that disease, aging, and reality is based upon the simple code that we can upgrade by QI?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
We have a growing body of scientific evidence. I quote it. We've got pages of references in the back of this book. I didn't want the book to be a highly technical book on the one hand. So for people that want to read through it quickly, they can do so. My mom read the book in 4 hours.
Wow.
So they can read it quickly. And when they find something that really tweaks their interest, I'm not asking them to take my word for it, because there are footnotes and references and endnotes in the back leading them to the places where they can explore and study these things on their own. What the science is telling us is this. In every moment of every day, there's a conversation that is happening between our heart and our brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dialogue, a two-way exchange, where our heart is sending signals to our brain, and based on the quality of that signal, our brain floods our body with the chemistry that matches that signal. So if our hearts are sending life-affirming signals of compassion, peace, love, understanding, forgiveness, then our brain is sending life-affirming chemistry, high levels of DHEA, the hormone that is the precursor for all other hormones. Our immune response increases tremendously in response to those kinds of experiences. Our cognitive abilities, our brain thinks clearer, we perform better in our jobs as athletes, just in life. And the opposite of all those things is true. In the presence of anger, hate, jealousy, rage, frustration, our heart sends a very irregular signal, unevenly spaced, if you look at the graphs, to our brain. And when our brain gets those kinds of signals, it responds by sending stress chemistry into our bodies. Now, I'm not saying that stress is bad or wrong. In the short term, it serves us. Unresolved anger, jealousy, hate, and rage, chronic over long periods of time, that's where people get into trouble, because their body is constantly sending stress chemistry, high cortisol levels, the fight or flight hormones, shutting down blood supplies to certain parts of our body to give other parts the blood that the body thinks it needs because we're in this stress situation. And, chronically, over long periods of time, this isn't good. It does the opposite. They're life-denying chemistry. What changes the signal in the heart is belief and feeling. That's what brings it all back to what we're talking about here. Our feelings and our beliefs determine the quality of those signals in our bodies. Now, the new discoveries are also showing that what we create in our heart is not limited, it's not confined to our bodies, that the field effect extends beyond our bodies into the world around us. And literally, I mean, this isn't just a metaphor or New Age, rhetoric. This is the science showing us that our feelings and beliefs literally have the power to rearrange the atoms that the stuff of our physical world is made of. And when we begin to realize that, that's where the healings in other people come from, and that's where seemingly miraculous experiences in our life come from, and all we're doing is having a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the language. Feeling and belief is the language that has been discounted here in the West. Men have been conditioned not to even engage their feelings.
Absolutely.
Women have been told, you can have your feelings, just go have them somewhere where nobody sees them, and when you're done, come back and don't talk about it because they didn't mean anything anyway.
Right.
And maybe that's a little harsh, but it's not.
No, but it's that, true.
It's not that exaggerated. And I was born and raised in a very conservative community in the Midwest, in northern Missouri, and that's not much of an exaggeration in the communities that I was raised in. Of course, I left as soon as I knew there was someplace else to go. but that was, a lot of us come from a generation and a culture where that was the thinking. And And this is the generation where all that gets to change. And this is the generation that straddles both ways of knowing and both ways of being. And that's why this is such a strong, powerful generation, and also one that is feeling the brunt of the change, because we're literally living both worlds, both ways of looking at things, and we're faced with changes in our world that we simply cannot address in the old ways of looking at them. So to survive what we've created, we've got to let go of some of the old ways and do so quickly in one generation. This isn't something that we're going to do over the next, 50 years. We've got, scientists tell us we've got, between, 8, 15, maybe 20 years to solve some of the problems that we've got out there, or they're irreversible. So we're on a quick learning curve, and I'm encouraged
Absolutely.
By what I'm seeing.
But you know what? I have a firm belief, absolute belief, that we will. We will accomplish some great things.
Well, Julie Johnson, I have to ask you a question. Because I don't know a lot about our program. Who are we talking to tonight? Where's your program go in the world?
Oh, it goes to Africa, Norway, of course the U.S., everywhere. I have a lot of international wonderful listeners out there.
Well, I'm going to say congratulations first on a successful program. And I want to, before our time's going quickly, and I want to acknowledge you and your work and what you create for your community. I didn't know how far it reached, but I know that programs like this are really important. And in the last 5 years, I've been on I've been on every continent of the earth. And there are a lot of places where people do not have the kind of community that you've created here, and they look for that kind of community on the airwaves or in the internet because they simply don't have it in their physical lives. So I want to thank you for your work, and I know that put something like this together and keep it going takes a lot of dedication and a lot of energy. So I want to thank you for that and for inviting me on the program today. Some interviewers, there's just a presence that some have, and others, it's more just about filtering through information. And I can tell that you really embrace and do your best to live what it is that you learn and share and explore in your program, and I think it makes all the difference. People can tell that.
Oh, well, thank you, Greg. That's so wonderful coming from you.
That was completely unscripted, huh? Okay, so now I have to say you're listening to the Julie Johnson Radio Hour and Law of Attraction Radio, and this is Greg Braden. I want to thank you for tuning in today.
Oh, my gosh.
How was that?
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Totally unexpected. Okay. Yeah. But I want to, because we do have a few more minutes, and I do want to cover something. In your book, you mentioned something that I thought was so fascinating, the nocebo effect, which is the exact opposite from the placebo effect.
Placebo effect, absolutely.
Can you just tell our listeners about this? Because it's just like, wow.
Well, we'll just do the whole story. We've still got some time here.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because our own science now has discovered the power of belief. And what I say is they don't believe it. They don't believe what they've found. And we know this is true because there are so many peer-reviewed technical journals and papers published in those journals about something called the placebo effect. The bottom line to a placebo effect is that it generally is associated with healing of some kind in the human body, although it doesn't have to be. It can be other things in the world. But the placebo effect is where someone is experiencing a condition and they are given something that they are told and that they believe will help and heal them, although in reality what they've been given has no power to affect any kind of healing whatsoever. So in double-blind medical studies, for example, patients will be given, told they're giving a healing solution, and in reality they're giving it saline, simple saline solution, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And they will experience the healing effects. So one of the places we've seen this with, I talk about some of these in the book, there are all kinds of studies, people who undergoing chemotherapy for cancer, certain mm-hmm. kinds of cancer. They've undergone the chemo. They know what it feels like. They know what its effects are. They're divided into groups. One group is given the actual chemo. The other group is given no chemo at all. They're given saline, but they believe it's chemo. And the belief is so strong that they actually respond as if they've been given the chemotherapy. They become nauseous. They have hair loss. And their cancer goes into remission just as if they'd been given the actual chemotherapy. In reality, they weren't given anything. There was a medical doctor in Seattle, Washington. His name was Dr. Cobb, who took this placebo effect one step further in terms of a physical procedure. Patients who had certain kinds of heart conditions, it was found that if arteries around the heart were tied off in one place, that would force more blood into other places. A very common procedure and very successful. It had about a 90% success rate. Dr. Cobb of Seattle, and again, this is documented in the book, did an experiment. He told people they were going to have that procedure. They were anesthetized, and they were even opened up. The incisions were made, but nothing was done. Then they were stitched back up, and they had the same results as if the procedure had been performed, to such a degree that they have now abandoned this procedure. They said it wasn't the procedure that was having the effect. It was the patient's belief in the procedure. And one of the things that we also document in the book was a study that was done at the University of Turin, Italy, in 2004, showing that this isn't just a psychological effect, that the brain will actually respond. The brain cells, if the person believes they're receiving a certain kind of medicine or chemistry in their bodies, that the brain cells will actually change as if that chemical were in the body, based on the belief of the person. And this is all called the nocebo effect. The placebo effect. So your question is with regard to the nocebo effect, which is just the opposite. If we believe that something will hurt us, whether that something is actually present or not makes very little difference. If the belief is there, it will. And this is precisely what has been found in the studies as well. And this is why a doctor, probably, in my opinion, should never look at someone and give them a definite negative answer about their condition. Because if we trust the opinion of a doctor, and the doctor says to us that we're not going to heal or introduces doubt, then our bodies will respond to that. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if a doctor says, you've got a condition, we haven't had much luck with anything, but we can try this new stuff and we'll see if it works, but I don't think it's really going to do much. You know, if a doctor says something like that, then that automatically introduces the doubt in our bodies, and we're not going to trust what it is that the doctor has just given to us.
But if a doctor came and said, okay, and he gives you a pill and says, hey, this pill, and it's really placebo, if he gives it to you and says, hey, you're going to lose all kinds of weight, you're not going to feel it, you're just going to start melting away, then that will have that effect because of that superior person, a doctor, that's getting that advice.
It can, because the suggestion is coming from someone that we trust. Mm-hmm. And we've placed our trust in a doctor representing a medical community. And so if you or whoever's having that experience is someone who trusts medical science and trust the doctor, it means a lot when they say that to us. This is such a powerful effect, and I share some of these other stories in the book. I worked with a woman whose father knew from the time he was a child that he would die in his 75th year. He was certain of it. As he got older in life, his father died at 75, and his father's brothers all died at 75. And for him, he just thought that was the way it was going to be. That's the course of life. And it helped him. He structured his entire life. He knew that he would have so many years in a career, so many years to spend with his family. And he was a healthy, vital man that had every reason to live. In his 75th year, after his 75th birthday, he went and had a physical, and he was diagnosed with a particularly aggressive form of cancer, and he was gone before the end of that 75th year. And it's not right, wrong, good, or bad, and, you know, we cannot prove scientifically that that's what happened. On the other hand, I worked with a woman when I was in the corporations in Denver, Colorado, whose husband believed he would die at 35. He was 33 at the time. And he believed that because all the men in his family had died at their 35th birthday. And so they were taking out insurance policies, preparing, you know, the family to go on without him in 2 years. And I'm not saying it can't happen. I just think it doesn't have to. And I shared an office with this woman. So we spent a lot of time talking about these things. And I didn't try to convince her of anything, but I shared the studies showing these relationships and how powerful our expectations are in our lives. They can either be life-affirming or life-denying, but we're very much a part of the equation. It's not out of our hands. And I can't say how the situation ended because I left the company while she was still working there. But by the when I left, he had lived to be 37 years old. And he was the first man in his family that had broken what they called this generational curse of all the males dying at 35. We can't prove it scientifically, but I can't help but believe his opening to the possibility of a longer lifespan certainly allowed his body to respond in that way. So the bottom line is that we're part of our world, of all that we see, whether we're talking about our physical being or whether we're talking about the circumstances of our lives. And when we really get what that's all about, we know that we really aren't powerless victims, as we've been led to believe and conditioned to believe. However, we are only as powerful as we allow ourselves to be in life. And I think this is the great challenge for most people is to overcome the conditioning that we are these little specks of dust that are very insignificant in the universe, and that we should be happy for what we have and never expect any more, and take what life gives to us and do the best we can and move on. You know, that's one way of looking at the world, and it works for some people, and for others, we know that there's another way to see the world. So when we see nations barreling down the path toward war, and it's something that we would like to see with a different outcome, what we know is the people making those choices are part of the same field of energy that we're all connected to when we wake up in the morning and fix our breakfast. There is no them and us. And we also know that when enough people learn the language of peace in their hearts, that peace is reflected in the world in broad geographic areas. It's a documented fact. So from that perspective, we all have a vote in terms of how things happen. It's just a very, very different way of thinking of our world.
So really, it's educating the masses, because the mass consciousness out there is really creating the wars, not just...
Well, sure, wars, and what's interesting to me
fears.
Is... Fears. Absolutely, and I think most people, as I travel the world, most people of the world are ready for something more than the suffering and the war that that dominated so much of the 20th century. I think we're all ready for something more. And we've been conditioned to believe that we are powerless to make those decisions, that we leave those decisions to someone else. And I think we're all beginning to see. You know, it's interesting because this is the 22nd year now that I've done workshops and seminars all over the world, and we're finding leaders in government organizations from our country and other countries. They show up at these seminars, and they say, you know, there was a time that we felt that everything was under control, but something has changed and something's gone wrong. We don't know what's happening, and we're looking for, you know, insights into what's going on in the world. So I think we're all in this together, and we're all doing the best we can, and we all want to be better people. We all want to create a better world, and now our own science, married with 5,000 years of the wisdom of our most cherished spiritual traditions, you marry those two together, and they're teaching us how to do just that.
Wow.
So I think it's a very exciting time.
Oh, it is. I'm just so tickled to be alive at this time. It's just wonderful. Now you said, or you say that there's instructions for healing our beliefs.
What we know is this, is that we live our lives based on what we believe. I think if the listeners really, really think about that statement, they'll find there's a lot of truth in it. We live our lives based on what we believe about ourselves, our world, our relationship to the world, our role in the universe. And when I began to understand that we live our lives based in what we believe, my first question was, well, where do those beliefs come from? And what I found is that they come from other people. Most of our beliefs come from what science tells us, or history, or culture, or our families, or our friends. You know, they come from sources outside of our own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And my next question after that was, well, what if they're wrong? You know, what if we're really delegates of a very powerful force in this world, and we live our lives within the bounds of false limits? They're not our limits. They're limitations that other people believe, and we've accepted them. And what I found is, in when I study the ancient traditions, the way they broke free of those false limits was through miracles. If they could see a miracle, even if they didn't understand how it worked, if they saw the miracle performed, it showed them that there was something more, and they had to reconcile that miracle in their lives. They had to adjust their belief systems to make room for what they had personally witnessed. So that's the miracles of our past. We do the same thing today, but rather than using miracles, we use science. When science can show us how something works, then we see a new way to believe about our world. So when we see that creating a belief in our hearts actually is creating a very powerful field of electrical and magnetic information that you can measure, and that it extends for miles beyond our bodies. This is how powerful these fields are. They're detected miles away from our hearts. Then we see the mechanism, how it's possible that a prayer in our hearts could possibly have a positive influence on our loved ones, you know, in a battlefield of Iraq halfway around the world, or on our loved ones in another town 50 miles away. And once we see that mechanism, it has the same effect that the miracles did in the past. It shows us that there's another way, there's something more, and then the choice is ours. We either stay with the limited belief system from before, or we incorporate the new possibility of what we've seen into our lives, and that's how we stretch and open the door to new possibilities. So the ancients used miracles. Today we use science. In our new book, I use both. I share the stories of ancient miracles in the monasteries of Tibet, in Milarepa's cave, and high in the Himalayas, for example, or a healing in a medicineless hospital in Beijing, China. And then I share the science that helps us to understand how those miracles could be possible. And in that way, we're shown both ends of the spectrum, left and right brain, and then it's our choice as to whether or not we embrace that new possibility and open our doors, the doors of our perceptions, to the possibility of something more. And it's a very personal experience. Everyone does it a little differently.
Great. Listen, you're on the advisory board for an ambitious new initiative called the Global Coherence Project. Mm. What exactly is this, and what does it mean for the world?
Well, this is it's under the auspices of an organization called the Institute of Heart Math. Have you interviewed any of the people from the Heart Math Institute on your program?
No, by any
chance? It's a for listeners who may not be familiar.
And I'm
Heart
not
Math,
either.
Okay, that it is a pioneering research organization. It's founded in 1991, and I've been affiliated. I'm not an employee of theirs. I've just known the people. We've been friends since 1991.
Uh-huh.
And HeartMath is a very unique organization that's come together. They're medical doctors, scientists, engineers, college professors from Stanford University, from University of Medicine in Los Angeles, computer scientists, physicists from many different walks of life, have all come together to pool their talents and resources exploring the power of the human heart in ways that have been overlooked in the past. And we know our heart pumps blood, but you can build a machine to do that. Our hearts do much more. And they're very well respected. They're published in the Journal of the American Medical Association and leading technical journals. So they have dedicated their lives and their their organization to exploring the power of the human heart. So it is under the auspices of this organization, one of the things that has been discovered is that our heart, and we mentioned this earlier, our heart is having a communication with our brain in every moment of every day. And when that communication is optimum, the term used is coherence. We say that our heart and our brain are having a coherent conversation, or the coherence level is high. Well, what they have also recently discovered is that there is a layer of the atmosphere that surrounds the Earth that pulses in the same electrical rhythm as our hearts do when we're in coherence.
In other words,
we are not only speaking to our brains, but we are having a conversation with part of the atmosphere. It's called the ionosphere around the Earth. And everyone is tied in. Everyone is hooked into that layer of the atmosphere. So when that layer of the atmosphere when many of us are feeling the coherent feelings of appreciation, gratitude, and peace, it is reflected in that layer of the atmosphere. Everyone benefits from it, and our hearts are more coherent. Our immune systems are stronger. We all benefit when even just a few people are feeling those kinds of feelings. So these are new discoveries. The fact that this layer resonates with the human heart, that's a new discovery. And the fact that we can create in our hearts the frequencies that will be measured in that field, that is a new discovery. So with all that in mind, there's a project that's being launched later this summer called the Global Coherence Project. And it's a project to teach many people how to create coherence in their bodies, and the equipment will tell us when that coherence exists in the atmosphere. And when we can do that, what we do, everyone benefits from that. That's when very tense political situations can be resolved. That's when our bodies are at their healthiest. That's when we think better and perform better as a collective society rather than just as individuals. So they're launching a very ambitious project that's twofold. The first layer is to train people to create coherence in their own bodies. The second level is to set up the equipment to be able to measure the atmosphere to know when that coherence is there, and to have it on a website that anyone can access at any time of the day, showing us what those readings are in the atmosphere when those things are happening. So for people that would like more information, I've got a little button. If you go to my homepage, my website homepage, at www.gregbraden.com, GREGGBRADEN.com, in the middle of the homepage, there is a little button there that says to learn more about the Global Coherence Project, click here. And it will take you directly into the website that talks about this project, and people can navigate it and on their own, explore it on their own. And if they want to participate, it will show them when it's going to happen and how to go about participating.
Wow, that is fantastic.
What's happening in the past, you know, I've been very well-intentioned experiments, and I've been part of those since 1998, where we ask people, you know, at 12 noon on a certain day of the week, you know, feel
right.
Peace in your heart. And I think we all benefit from that. I think it's good to do. But the truth is, there's no way of knowing when and to what degree people are really creating coherence in their hearts. This is the first time a science-based initiative
wow.
has been launched where we can actually teach people. They have devices that people can use, software. They can hook themselves up to tell them when they are truly in that coherent state. That takes all the guesswork out.
Wow.
Then we know more of the right things to do, and the things that don't work for us, we can stop doing them. And once you learn that, you don't need the gadgets anymore. The gadget just tells you, you know, when you're in the right space.
It also seems to me like we wouldn't have a need for weapons anymore if everybody could do this. Could be.
Well, I think we're reaching a point. I believe this is the generation where we'll outgrow the habit of solving our problems through war.
Yay.
I think weapons will probably always exist. I think the need to use those weapons between ourselves is something that we'll outgrow. We may need those weapons for something else at some other point in the future. There's a whole program we could do on that. But I think the weapons will always exist, but I think we'll learn to use them differently and outgrow the habit of warfare with ourselves to solve our problems.
Wow. Absolutely brilliant. Well, I'm going to go to that site. I'm going to urge everybody, but even more important, I'm going to urge all of my listeners throughout the world, you got to go out and get this book. Get it. It is absolutely fantastic. It's going to change your life, and I can guarantee it's a whole new way of looking at things, and everybody's got to know about it. Greg, thank you so much for awakening everyone.
Well, I you're very welcome. Thank you for the kind words. I think people are awake. I think they're just looking for some direction.
Thank you so much, Greg. I really appreciate it. And to all my wonderful listeners, I will talk to you next week.
You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.